welcome to Mostly Film. I'm not going to go talking about my... All I could think of was a look at my balls dangle. And
that was the next words.
What you were about to hear. Welcome back to Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of film. I'm one of your host, John the Gorgeous, my beautiful co-host, JP Payton, but we're both co-hosts.
I mean, you can be the co-host.
I can be the co-host. We're just going to let you open one time.
Yeah, except I'm not going to do the film reel.
You got to do the film reel.
I'll just splice it in. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a couple days till Christmas now. It's Thursday.
Merry Christmas.
Well, I mean, it's Monday for us, but Thursday for you, listening to this as it releases. Hope you got all your last second Amazon ordering. If not, you have a few hours left before it gets to you. And if not, be a man. Be a woman. Go to a brick and mortar store and buy something.
Yeah.
I love shopping brick and mortar. The only problem is, we talked about this last Wednesday at BAMA. There's something magical about going and holding a book in your hand, like both of those, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I held both of those in my hand at Books A Million.
Yeah.
Abby doesn't listen to this. So.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, I held both of these in my hands at Books A Million, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I was looking for something for my dad, but points the same. She goes, well, see how much they are on Amazon.
Right
buying
there.
Both of those on Amazon?
Yeah.
Guess how much that saved me?
$15.
$18.
Oh, wow.
Like, of course I'm gonna buy it on Amazon, man.
Yeah,
saving now if it was a dollar or two difference, I'd bite the bullet and buy it at brick and mortar for convenience if I'm already there, you know, just take it home.
Sure.
But it's a bummer, man.
I feel you. I don't personally like the fact that all of our Christmas presents have just showed up on our doorstep.
Yeah, it takes the fun away, man. Oh, what fun it is to save. They know that their marketing's on it, bro.
But Caitlin's like literally accumulates her Christmas list through the whole year and just sends it to anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
And to her, that just feels easier, and that's fine. I actually got Caitlin's present at an antique store.
Antique?
Yeah. And we try not to do anything big just because of, you know, reasons.
Yeah.
So I got a little knickknack shelf so that she can put all her little knickknacks.
What if she's our biggest fan and she doesn't tell you?
Oh, she definitely does not. She's definitely not.
She might be. You don't know. We do have a big fan in Paducah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who, I just see it. Anyway. So let's jump into it. We got some Christmas movies we watched this week. Are you ready for this?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be.
Let's start with Krampus.
Okay.
I have a ton of fun with this movie. So let's start with... This is a 2015 Krampus. There's a bunch of Krampus films out there. This is a 2015 directed by Michael Daughtry. Not sure you would say it. And very short synopsis. You don't want to be on his list. A horror comedy based on the ancient legend about a pagan creature who punishes children on Christmas. So this is a 2.9. And most people hang out about the three star range.
Yeah.
Which is where you were, right?
I mean, yeah. Yeah,
isn't that what you gave it? Three?
Yeah, that's what I gave it.
Yeah, I gave it 4. I've always teetered between 3.5 and 4 every year. This year I was a 4. Last year I was a 3.5. This year it just hit me better. So this is like I said, comedy horror starring Adam Scott, Tony Collette, Alison Tolman, David Koechner, and Stefania Levee Owen. Which I say her because I've seen her in some other stuff: The Lovely Bones, Beach Bum. Yeah, she's in a few other things. So Krampus. Long story short, this kid believes in Santa Claus but has a really bad day and rips his note up, throws it into the sky, and a deity, Krampus, intercepts it and basically wishes, you know, he wishes his family away, basically. And, you know, bad holiday spirit, bad holiday juju. And the night goes on. They have the in-law or the sister, right? It's like in-laws come over?
The mom's sister, yes.
Yeah, and her husband and the mom or aunt. The uninvited aunt shows up, aunt. And their little suburb gets hit by an unexpected random blizzard. And these little things start happening, like there's snowmen in the yard. There's all the lights are out. Nobody's out doing anything. The daughter goes to her boyfriend's house up the road to check and see if anything's going on. Doesn't come back. This is where things really pick up. So Adam Scott and the uncle, which would be his brother-in-law, They go try to find her, and they realize that something terrible has happened, and the house is ransacked. The chimney is completely busted all the way down, and something takes David Koshner in the snow. Now, David Koshner or Snow or Koshner, I don't know how you say his name, but it's Champ Kind from Anchorman. Yeah. Or
Howard.
Yeah, let's call him Howard. Yes. It's his name in the film. Howard is like your Trump MAGA guy, got his big Hummer, got all of his guns, you know. Yeah. And then Adam Scott's like your just everyday Joe kind of guy, you know, just.
He's an Eagle Scout.
Yes, Eagle Scout, but kind of non-confrontational, that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this thing starts trying to get him in the snow, and it's when he realizes there's something really, really bad going on. They barely make it back to the house. Then, the kid gets taken up the chimney, and you get the crazy gingerbread cookies that come to life. The attic scene with the angel treetopper coming to life, the angry teddy bear, and then the Jack in the Box, which is what was attacking him outside under the snow.
That's what was out in the snow?
That's what I assumed, because it was had the long snake-like thing. Otherwise, we never found out what that was.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right.
So that's what I figured it was. Basically, Krampus has come to town, and he's enlisted all these, terrible dreams from your nightmares, but Christmas themed. So gingerbread cookies, toys, elves, they're all coming wreaking havoc on you. And they have to try to survive this night. Most of them do not. And then by the end of the film, you find out, the kid is just the boy left who made this Christmas wish that for whatever it was for his family to go away. He sees Krampus about to throw him down into hell, looks like.
Yeah.
And he basically begs them not to. And then he's like, okay, cool. And throws him down in the hole instead. He wakes up. It's Christmas morning. Everybody's happy. Good. Oh, wow. Everything's great. And then the more they start talking about it, they realize everybody else starts to remember what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, wait. This is real, because you immediately start to think, if you've never seen it before, I'm sure you did. You knew, of course, it wasn't real the moment he woke up.
The filter on the screen, it was super glowy. This is fake.
I remember the first time I saw it, I assumed it was just going to be him being tormented forever. Nobody else would have any clue what he was talking about. But unfortunately for I guess probably for sanity wise, it's better for everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody's actually there with him in the moment. And they're remembering what happened, and they know now they're stuck forever in a snow globe in Krampus's Christmas shop. So, Barry, that's a very rushed synopsis there. But what are your takes on Krampus? What worked for you? What didn't work for you? Who was good? Who was a letdown?
I've put this movie off for a long time for obvious reasons.
Did it scare you any?
No, it did not scare me. A couple jump scares, but pretty obvious jump scares.
Yeah.
The one at the end was honestly the biggest.
Which one was that?
Just whenever all the toys jump up at the screen. Whenever at the very end, whenever you realize, they're stuck in a snow globe, and they jump out at the very end. That's honestly the biggest jump scare. But I don't know. I expected something a little. I expected more just based off what you had told me.
Yeah, more which part? More horror violence, more comedy, what?
More comedy, maybe. This movie wasn't serious at all.
No.
And it probably would have benefited from a little bit more serious tone at certain points. Not to say that you couldn't have the comedic relief of Howard and his wife. What's her name? Whenever Linda kind of takes control in the attic, that is a serious moment, but it's also kind of laced with comedy and kind of how it happens. She's taking an axe to this angel and I don't know, just going complete Rambo. It's it was too all over the place at certain points for me. And I could see this totally working from a place of kind of like a Babadook.
Yeah.
I mean, really would have worked, but I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Who was your favorite character?
Howard.
Yeah, me too. That gingerbread scene was funny.
Yeah. Hilarious.
I laughed out loud in that scene.
But I also liked him whenever they're out trying to go find Beth, And yeah, you just kind of, that was kind of like him and Tom's like bonding moment.
Yeah.
Them just going out there. Like, it honestly reminded me of Christmas Vacation. It reminded me of Cousin Eddie.
When he goes and gets the guy for him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but just like that dynamic, it was very much the same. So I found that kind of relatable. So, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, no, Krampus is a fun time. It's an annual watch. I do watch it each year. Have a good time with it each year. It's funny each year. But yeah, there's just like I teeter between that half star difference every year for me. You're three. I'm 3.5, 4.
I could see this in my Christmas rotation, but at the detriment of, I could see this movie very, very quickly losing its sheen.
Yeah, I said that after I saw it in theaters. Said that after the first time I saw it. I was like, nah, I'll watch it again next year. I was like, oh yeah, I really like it still, but I probably won't like it next year. And then I do like it. It's just, I fluctuate. Some years I like it a little bit better than others.
Yeah.
But as a whole, I think Krampus is a ton of fun and it's well made.
The pace of it moves really quickly. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of, that helps it a lot. So yeah, 98 minutes is perfect.
I agree. You know what else is 98 minutes?
What?
Actually, no, it's not.
Oh, okay.
I was going to be really impressed. That was a good guess. Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
I mean,
what a freaking banger of a film, man. Listen, I'm not even going to read the synopsis because we all know it's about literally Macaulay Culkin, Kevin McAllister, who's lost in New York now because his family's forgot him on a vacation and he got on the wrong plane, whatever. This one is a superior Home Alone. I'm just going to say it. It's better than the first Home Alone. It's funnier than the first Home Alone. The performances are better than the first Home Alone. Rob Schneider and Tim Curry are just great welcome additions into this. The only thing you're missing is John Candy. Other than that, Home Alone 2 is fantastic. You get a Donald Trump appearance. Did you catch that?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But first of all, what are your takes on Home Alone, Home Alone 2?
I'll be honest. I think it's great. I struggle with it being better than the original because I think there are some distinctive differences in the premise of the movies. Home Alone 2 definitely stretches itself to match a lot of the same different beats that you have in Home Alone. I don't know if you actually need Marv and Harry. I don't know if you actually need Harry and Marv in Home Alone 2 for it to be truly effective. I think honestly that was one of the things that kind of made it a stretch. But it's still really good, you know. I think it makes itself feel more like a Christmas movie in Home Alone 2 because of kind of like the theme and the message that it's trying to get across. Which probably helps it a little bit better than Home Alone.
No, I agree. And I wish you guys should get a little bit more time in the hotel before you transition out because
that was probably my biggest critique. Because
Tim Curry and Rob Schneider joining forces with Marv and Harry would have been all time.
Yeah.
But and then him getting to booby trap the whole hotel. Like,
I mean, make that the movie. It's just like,
yeah,
of Tim Curry and
Rob Schneider.
Yeah. Rob Schneider just trying to,
and the random lady. Sure. But like though, Rob Schneider and Tim Curry, like that scene where they go upstairs and he turns on the movie, the retread from the first one. He's like, and I know you've been smooching my brother too. You've been smooching Harry and Tom and Jerry and Cliff. And the old man Cliff is like, no. Every time I watch that, I get tickled to my core. Like, I know it's coming. It's great. But no, Home Alone 2 is good. To me, I feel like Marv and Harry are more believable in what they're doing than they are in the first one. Like, hey, they're going to go rob, you know, this children's store from some extra cash Christmas night. I don't know. Something about it just feels a little bit more.
In the movie, though, it felt more like a stretch in the second one because they make it seem like some kind of heist. Like they're breaking in. I don't know if the crime doesn't fit the perk, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, I get it.
So
they're just desperate.
They are. I mean, they're the sticky bandits, man.
Sticky bandits.
That's not to say I didn't like that part of the show or the movie. It just, I don't know. It was a little bit of whiplash going back and forth from, you know, the concierge and all that at the hotel to Kevin having to deal with Harry and Marv.
Like I said, I think this film missed a golden opportunity to have, whether it just have been Tim Curry and Rob Schneider, but I would love to see all four of them team up together. Like, you know, because of how he treated, like, get out of here, you little pervert. I'm going to slap you silly. Like, they would have fired Tim Curry for that or something. And then he's down on his luck. And then discovers where he's living too.
I think originally, because it had been a long time since I had seen Home Alone 2. And my first thought was, oh, Tim Curry's character and Rob Schneider, the busboy, they work together to like steal from these people.
Yep.
Like they break in and they go through.
That's what I'm saying. I think they had a lot of fun opportunities you could have done with those two that they just didn't explore fully.
Yeah.
And maybe because they were too big, because Tim Curry and Schneider were both booming pretty much at the time. So who knows? But also like Joe Pesci was too. So
I'm sure his forever.
Yeah. But no, I had a really good time with Home Alone 2 Lost in New York, and I do find it more enjoyable. I think it's funnier. I think it's maybe not paced better, but on par with pacing of the first one.
It feels long to me, personally.
It is 2 hours.
Yeah.
Right on the dot. But so what do you rate Home Alone 2?
Home Alone 2 is a solid 3.5 for me.
Solid 4 for me.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump up to the next one because it blew my mind. Let's talk about It's a Wonderful Life. Have you ever seen it?
Can we talk about this last?
Yeah, we can talk about
this
last.
I'd love to talk about this last.
Let's do Family Man then.
Let's do Family Man.
It's basically a retelling.
Yeah,
because now you've seen that. Well, that's how I was going to say. You saw It's a Wonderful Life, and now you've seen Family Man. It can work the opposite way too. So you watched Family Man. Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
Which is, now that you've seen It's a Wonderful Life, do you think this holds as a modern retelling of It's a Wonderful Life? If not, it's heavily inspired.
It is heavily inspired, but I don't think so, because I don't think Family Man is a Christmas movie.
What?
I don't think this is a Christmas movie.
What?
Mm-mm. Die Hard is more of a Christmas movie than this.
Oh my gosh, you are absurd.
I'm just saying.
How is this not a Christmas movie? It's all centered around Christmas.
It's not centered around Christmas, though.
It all takes place at Christmas.
It takes place at Christmas.
Oh, no, this is a Christmas movie.
There's no resolve involving Christmas. There's no callback to Christmas outside of the fact he wakes up and it's Christmas with his family.
It's Christmas. This is a Christmas movie.
All it does is serve as a timestamp to show how much time has passed. I get how this movie can be marketed as a Christmas movie. You make this movie, and it's even released on Christmas in, shoot, I don't know how many years ago it was, but
2000.
Yeah. For me personally, watching this movie, I kept waiting for the moment of even,
it's literally classified as a Christmas movie.
I understand that. I understand that, but it did not feel like a Christmas movie.
It did. It did. You can be wrong on this one, homie.
I'll be wrong.
You are wrong.
All
right. So Christmas movie aside, tell me about your thoughts of The Family Man. Yeah, The Family Man, brief synopsis, is it follows Nicolas Cage, who's this like super, super, super successful closer in a big corporate world. And years and years ago, he broke up with his fiancée to be Kate, and decides to stay in London and not come home, and he becomes super successful. He stops a robbery, and in the meantime, the robbery, who is Don Cheadle, turns out to be like this like angel or genie, whatever, angel, you know.
Yeah.
And he basically is like, you know, you think you have everything you want, you don't need anything, just remember that you did this to yourself. And he wakes up the next morning, he's back living the life he would have been living if he never left to go to London, or came back from London, you know.
Yeah.
And this whole journey is part hijinks, part sentimental. Like, obviously, he's panicked at first, thinks this is some joke, but nobody knows who he is except for his new family, which would have been his old family. So now he's got to find a way to accept this and grow in this life where he can go back to his old. But by the time he learns to accept this life that he's living in now and love the people that he's living with, then he obviously doesn't want to go back, and he fights that sleep and fights that. Then he wakes up and he's back to where he was. And now he's got to make a decision. Is he going to stay in his life, or is he going to try to pursue what he could have had? And then that's it in a kind of a nutshell.
Yeah. I think this movie is great.
Yeah. This is one of the most, when I say balanced, it's not like Pig or anything like that, but like, this is a very good, even killed Cage performance.
Emotional ranged movie for Cage.
With still some Cage in it.
Yeah. I kind of like a pretentious Cage.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime that he's playing this highfalutin, like, I'm better than you type of character, and he's brought down to earth.
Yeah.
I think that really sells well. But yeah, I can't get over the fact that I didn't feel
it's okay. It doesn't have to be a Christmas movie. Let's just discuss it.
Listen, my critique, really, Don Cheadle, what was he? Who is he?
He's an angel.
Okay, he's an angel.
He's like Clarence.
Okay, a little bit of specification for that would have been.
He said, "Man, what you did back there was really great. All the way up to the hierarchies of the organization." And he looked up.
Yeah,
heaven, the okay. Angels. That's all you need. That's all it is.
I, Tia, what's her name?
Oh, Katie. Yeah, you talking about Kate? Tia Leone.
Yeah.
Holy Scott said every like our age.
Yeah.
When they were like, when Pete, well, not ours, I guess teenagers, yes, thought she was the hottest thing on the planet.
Yeah.
Which I can see that.
Yeah, absolutely. She's great, though.
To me, Jeremy Piven, I love Jeremy Piven's character in this. The friend.
Oh, yes.
Jeremy Piven was awesome.
Yeah.
We all need a friend like Jeremy Piven.
Yeah.
Honestly,
looking back, like, we didn't get enough of him.
No, he would have been, he would have been
the perfect sounding board. For
trying to tell him what's happening to him.
Yeah, to really show what he's processing.
Yeah.
But I will say we get some of that with his daughter.
Yeah.
Who, great casting, great performance.
Like, me and my wife and Abby's family quote this movie all the time. Like, especially like, are you smacked out of your mind? We all quote that all the time.
Yeah.
Or something like when they're at that dinner party and they're talking about the Nets, like, but they're due though.
Yeah.
They're due. He's like, man, the Nets suck. But they're due. They're due though. And then the whole
I love you.
Yeah. There's just so much to love about this movie.
I agree.
Is it upper echelon to Cage for you?
No. I mean, it's good. I mean, it's, when you say, I don't.
Okay, I need you to rewatch this before Christmas.
You are so unbiasedly though, like,
no,
nostalgic.
No, I'm not. I did not watch this movie. I'd never heard of this movie until.
Okay. Over 10 years ago?
No, 4 or 5 years ago was the first time I discovered Family Man.
Okay.
So I immediately loved this movie.
Yes.
I need you to watch this with your wife before Christmas.
Okay.
And I want to hear what her thoughts are.
I can do that.
Because she will like this. Even if she doesn't think it's a Christmas movie, she'll like this movie.
Yes. No, I like it.
I know, but she'll think this is a Christmas movie. You're on an island by yourself with this take.
Listen, this is not, of all the movies that we have just watched in the past 2 weeks, this is the least Christmassy of them all.
I would say this is just as much Christmassy as Home Alone 2.
Oh my God. No, Home Alone 2 is all, like, he even talks about how Kevin loves Christmas more than everybody. He's making such a big deal about how everybody's going to Florida instead of being around trees and Christmas and lights and all this stuff. There's not a single mention outside of the fact.
But It's a Wonderful Life.
I hadn't got there yet. It's not
overtly Christmas.
It's not. It's not.
But it's a Christmas movie.
It is a Christmas movie.
Okay, then where's the... Okay, we'll get there. Bad Santa He's just a Santa Claus. Just takes place at Christmas time.
I didn't care for Bad Santa.
It's not a Christmas movie anymore. And
he dresses up as Santa.
This is more Christmassy than Bad Santa.
Okay.
Well, I didn't think I was going to have to get on my soapbox about freaking the family man over here being a Christmas movie. It's wild. Anyway, as a whole, just in general, this movie got nominated for some stuff too. It's got a 3.2 on Letterboxd. I think that's fair. So yeah. It's just an old rom-com. 2000. I think it holds up well for being 23 years old.
I agree.
So I really enjoyed this movie. I every year I watch it, I look forward to it. There's this, I literally can't contain myself. I laugh out loud so hard every year because it caught me off guard 3 or 4 years. I was watching it in Abby's parents' basement 4 or 5 years ago whenever I watched it for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And when he's like, he's chasing her around the house with a chocolate cake and they get into the staircase. And she's like, you know, they're having like their kind of intimate moment.
Yeah.
And she's like, tell me what I want to hear. And he's like, you make me hot, baby. You make me hot. Every year I watch that and
that's just Cage.
I lose it. And she's like, nice, Jack. Real nice. Like, what? You make me hot. I was just like, I can almost quote this movie like I can Anchorman. Like something about this movie just clicked with me the first time I've watched it. And I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. It's one of my all time favorite Nicolas Cage movies. It's good. It's good. That was a Christmas Vacation quote. So you won't be watching this then every Christmas?
No, I could.
But it's not a Christmas movie.
If somehow... Listen.
It's Christmas adjacent for you, then.
Yes.
So it's close enough to Christmas. You can watch it every Christmas.
This is Christmas vibes.
This would be like first week of December movie for you.
Yeah, this is, middle of December,
I can live with your take on that as long as it's a Christmas watch.
Yes, it is.
I don't want to watch Family Man in the summer.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, but no, I don't want
to. It would feel weird.
Yes.
Feel out of place.
Because it's a Christmassy.
Yeah.
Christmas adjacent film.
Yeah. And so the thing that I think the Family Man, Christmas adjacent, whatever, the theme that it's trying to sell us in this movie of what are you, all these things in life that you think that you could have had, are they really worth it for what you could have had? I forget exactly what the wife says whenever he's trying to pitch her. I think it was the anniversary date. He was like, what could have been? And she just kind of says we could have had all this stuff, but I would have had to given up all those stuff that I know was good. And I think that pretty much sums up the movie and why, it could be classified as a Christmas movie is because those are the things that we look for in this time of year, the things that we look forward to being with family and, everything that leads up into it. So,
what's crazy about this director?
Yeah.
Did you look at his filmography?
I hadn't.
All over the place. X-Men 3, The Last Stand, Rush Hour 1, 2, and 3.
And soon to be 4?
No. Red Dragon, the sequel to...
Hannibal Lecter, Silence of the Lamb.
Yeah. Movie 43. You like this one, Tower Heist.
I don't know if I like it.
The Rock's Hercules.
Okay.
Money Talks. I mean, all over the place. That's a wild filmography. Anyway, let's go to what I think this stole a lot of inspiration from.
Yeah.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Frank Capra's 1946 freaking masterpiece.
Yeah, absolutely.
Starring one of my all-time favorites, James Stewart, Donna Reed, Lionel Barrymore, Thomas Mitchell, Henry Travers. I mean, there's a ton of old names. James Stewart, though, I mean, I love him in this role, but Vertigo and Rear Window, there's another one called Rope I've seen on here. I'm looking at some of his older movies.
Anatomy of a Murder.
Freaking Harvey is really good. I like Harvey. I've never seen Anatomy of a Murder. Have you?
No.
Oh, I've never seen that one. James Stewart is a great actor. Great actor.
Yeah.
But It's a Wonderful Life. A holiday favorite for generations. Stars talking about George Bailey, spent his entire life giving to people of Bedford Falls. All that prevents rich skinflint Mr. Potter from taking over the entire town is George's modest building and loan company. But on Christmas Eve, the business's $8,000 is lost and George's troubles begin. This has got a 4.4 average Letterboxd rating, which is insane.
Yeah.
For especially from 1946 movie. To hold that high of a rating. I have had this at 5 stars and 4.5. Never gone below 4.5. It's always one of those two. Yeah. This year is a 4.5 star for me. Last year is a 4.5 star. So I'm back to back years of 4.5 star. You first time watch
first time masterpiece. Watch
this, 5 stars. First time I watched it, I was also 5 stars.
It's amazing.
Watched this every year since I was. This was one my dad, like we, me, and my mom and dad, mm-hmm. like sister, we watched every year. So I've seen this movie, probably in the hundreds of times, but I've seen it a ton. So I definitely grew up nostalgia, but to have this film stay at a 4.5 star, 5 star film teeter every year for 24 plus years.
Yeah.
Testament to its longevity, but also the quality of the film this is. So, you know, George loses his hearing, saving his brother's life at the beginning of the film in one of his ears. But has these big aspirations of going off to college, traveling the world, changing the world with different innovations and stuff like that. But when his dad, you know, company is about to get taken out and bought out, he has to, after his dad's death, he has to step up and either take the place over or let it die. So he chooses to stay because he don't want to see his family business in other hands and have Potter take over it. So he stays, you know, falls in love with Mary. They have kids, and now he's stuck in Bedford Falls. Sometimes he looks at it as stuck. Sometimes he looks at it as home. You know, kind of depends on the mood he's in. And it gets to a point where, you know, he's the savior of the town. Everybody loves him. He's happy to be there. Got everything he could possibly want in life. And then Christmas Eve, a bank inspector shows up to do one final audit. They kept pushing down the road. And his Uncle Billy lost the $8,000 that was there, and they're going to get closed. He's going to get arrested. And in that panic, he basically goes to kill himself, drinks himself to a stupor, goes to kill himself, and jumps in the water, whatever.
Yeah.
To kill himself. Fails. Got someone saves him, right?
Well, he's going to jump and sees that somebody's already in the water.
In
he
the
jumps,
water, that's what it is.
He jumps to save.
So I was thinking Clarence. Of the guy in the bridge house.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So he goes to jump in and saves this guy in the water. Turns out it's Clarence, which from early in the film, there's three talking stars, Joseph and Clarence and what I would assume is God.
No, I think it was just another angel.
I thought they never said the name.
Mm.
Maybe they did.
Michael. Joseph and Michael.
Okay. So you got the Archangel Michael and Joseph, and then Clarence, who's trying to earn his wings. And they said if they can fix George Bailey, or if Clarence can fix George Bailey, they'll give him his wings. So that's his task. He goes and he basically is like, you know, you wish you'd never been born. You're going to get to see life as if you had never been born. So he gets to, everybody can see him and interact with him, but they have no clue who he is. And he has all the memories of his people. So he gets to go through this, you know, how long do you think it was? Just one night?
Yeah.
Just one night?
Yeah.
Okay. He goes through like one night of watching and interacting with people from his town and people he's grown up with and seeing the impact of how things are so much different if he never had lived. And by the end of it, he was, you know, ready to be home and with his family and back to how things used to be. So he grants it. He goes back and the whole townspeople come together to rally and give him the $8,000. That's the short and long of it there.
Yeah.
Before I kind of deep dive this, for the first time watcher for It's a Wonderful Life, what 5 stars is a strong take after one film, especially for a nearing 100-year-old movie.
Yeah.
So
I fascinated, like, you're watching something this old, there are going to be the things that stick out to someone of our age, just whether it's editing, whether it's
harsh transitions.
Yeah.
Like they're like starting here and then the next frame, they're like,
well, there's one in the bank with Uncle Billy.
Yeah.
Uncle Billy and Porter.
Potter.
Porker is what I was thinking for some reason. Porter. And yeah, where Billy's like hard cut. Like he's standing there one scene.
Is that after he lost his money?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a bad one.
It's pretty rough. But no, watching this for the first time with the relevancy of the story that it's telling and how it's being portrayed, how applicable it is to our own lives now. I think that Stewart, like his character of kind of being like this, I was reading somewhere else where, you know, he personifies an every man's man.
Yeah. That's a good.
And so him being that avatar that I'm sure it's surprising because this movie, when it first came out, did not do well.
No.
And it's over the years
become one of the most beloved films of all time.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's because probably at the time, a story like this with very harsh takes on capitalism.
Yep.
On, honestly, the realities of depression and probably the war. All these other things that we probably like to gloss over in the time. It just had a pretty harsh take on. And honestly, probably went over a lot of people's heads. Yep. That's not to discredit people's ability to interpret all this stuff.
Well, and when it goes over people's heads, people wouldn't, you know, fear what they don't understand.
Yes.
Just like, oh, this is, oh, yeah.
Exactly. And I think it's just,
I think people saw, because I've read some stuff on this. It's one of my books downstairs too. I think they saw freaking James Stewart and Donna Reed.
Yeah.
And are like, oh, we got to go see this, because Donna Reed was a big deal too.
Yeah.
And then it just wasn't what they thought it was going to be.
Sure.
I think at the time.
So whenever you rewatched this, did you watch this in color or black and white?
I will always watch it in black and white.
Okay.
If I know I'm going to watch it twice, I'll watch it in color the first time, because I don't want people to experience it in color for the first time.
Yeah.
So
I watched it in black and white. I was kind of... So what is the experience then like?
Have you seen it in color?
No.
Okay. It's looks good. It looks good in color.
Okay, so it doesn't take away from...
It does.
Okay.
It does.
In what ways? But that's
not to say... I think... This movie is it's 1946.
Yeah.
It was obviously made in black and white.
Yeah.
It fits perfectly in black and white. Color, it looks old as sin, which is why it still works.
Yeah.
It looks like it's just, you know, it's just Technicolor. You know, it looks good.
Sure.
It looks beautiful. It's fun to watch. It's beautiful to watch. However, it just takes some of the soul out of the film a little bit. Like it
feels more like a stage production.
Yeah, yeah. And you're more aware of those, like the defects we were talking about. You're more aware of that kind of stuff with the color. It does, like I said, I would still give it the same rating.
Totally.
Like, the content's still the same, and it doesn't take away that much from it. But yeah, I gravitate to, because I mean, I own it, a hard copy too, and one disc is my one Blu-ray's regular black and white, one's color.
Yeah.
So I've seen it two or three times in color, and every time I'm like, I don't like that one as much. But
yeah.
I think you should watch it in color once just to see it, because it is really beautiful to watch. But I just don't want anybody to ever like hear me say, oh, watch it in color the first time. Don't do that. Watch it in black and white the first time. How it was, I think, kind of meant to be watched.
Yeah.
How it was filmed. And I think you'll find more appreciation in that than you would in the black and in the color
scheme. I honestly, I didn't know what to expect watching this. Outside of knowing that this is a classic, I didn't go in with any high expectations, and honestly, it was really, it's just like one of those. It's like a milestone type of movie.
Now, is this an annual rewatch?
I think so. This is like a Christmas Eve, Christmas Day type of watch. So, yeah.
No, I agree with you there. It's closer to Christmas, the better.
Yes.
All right. So we watched, or is it just me now? For the Santa Claus. Was that it?
Yeah.
We've talked about the rest of them?
Yeah.
Okay. The Santa Claus. I love the Santa Claus. I love Tim Allen. I love are really out of that cast. I really just love Tim Allen. I like a lot of the other people in it. You talked a little bit about it the other day. You know, it's Tim Allen is a toy idea tank kind of guy. Recently divorced, not happy about his lot in life. Has a son, Charlie, with him, right?
Charlie? Yeah.
Okay. I keep wanting to think I'm wrong because of the Wonka coming out and Charlie talking about this. And when he's reading a bedtime story, you hear a rose such a clatter. And he goes out there at Santa. He falls off the roof. He sees a card. He reads the Santa Claus and he becomes Santa Claus. And then the hijinks and the heartbreak and the redemption all come together. And those are new names for reindeer now. Heartbreak, redemption. Yeah. But, you know, we've all seen the Santa Claus. I don't have to recap the whole thing. What works for me here, Tim Allen was born to be this role. Tim Allen is perfect at the Santa Claus. B, the practical designs. I just missed the days where you built sets. Like the North Pole sets, all the house stuff. Like everything about this film was felt real, looked real, was tangible, could see, feel, you know. I bet those are memories that lasted a lifetime for those people. Like the visuals of that. Like you can just tell it was all real. It's not all green screen. I miss that. I loved how the Santa Claus looks. I appreciate it more every single year when we live in a world with, you know, and I don't mean this as a jab, but like the Avatar films, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're just missing some part of the heart and soul of the film, and the Santa Claus has all of those things. I think the Santa Claus is funny. I think the Santa Claus is also heart kind of, not wrenching, it's probably too strong a word, but it is, it's a lot. Like, especially now having a kid, like it, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Santa Claus, I mean, so we've all seen it. I don't want to deep dive it and spend, you know, take a bunch of time talking about it. I just, this is undeniably a Christmas film, and it is undeniably a annual Christmas film for me. Sometimes I see it twice a year, or in the month of December. So yeah, Santa Claus is a fantastic film. I love it. What did you give it?
I'll have to look it up. It wasn't that great.
I gave it 4 stars. I think you were 3.5.
I had it at 3.5. Yep.
Okay. I thought so. I get that rating. I think 3.5.
Yeah.
Is fair.
I think I had it. Yeah. My review for this was 3.5, half star bump for concept alone, full star drop for Neil.
Yeah, that's true. And Neil is an insufferable prick in this movie.
Yes. Even whenever he does have his redemption, it's just like, I don't trust it.
Weenie whistle. Or not, what he got?
Yeah, he got a weenie whistle.
Yeah, weenie whistle. But yeah, no, that's it. That brings us to the end of what we were watching. Do we have a topic or two? Or we just want to let him go and say Merry Christmas.
Just a topic or two, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, it's two words. Topic, Merry, or two, Christmas. We'll be off for the next couple weeks. Next Monday is Christmas. The next Monday is New Year's Day. We will reveal the next Monday the next Monday and kind of talk about a plan going forward and what we are going to do, what we're going to review, how we're going to do it, and go from there.
And hopefully we'll have an idea of what the Oscar.
Oh, yeah. We should by then look alike.
So I think Golden Globes will be happening probably the day before, possibly as well.
Oh, so we might have some big old news stories.
I think it'll be January 7th is Golden Globes.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll have some big news stories. So this has been another episode of Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of cinema. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan McWhorter, joined by my beautiful co-host, Chippy Payton.
See you guys.
Merry Christmas.